Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Macko. It's Bob, how you doing?
I'm good, Matt. And I want to start off before we get to the Leafs and the Jays and Scotty Barnes and so on and so forth. I've got one of your favorite topics I want to discuss because my family has hit an important benchmark. And Uncle Matt, you're going to love it.
Oh, love it.
My daughter just discovered South Park.
Oh, yes. Good. And that.
I told my mom, she said, oh, that's great. Everybody's a little nervous, but she consumed two seasons in about, how far into March break are we? About 4 days. And I told her, Uncle Matt loves South Park. Can you tell people how much you love South Park?
Oh, it's always that galactic battle between that versus Simpsons for what's the best of the all-time cartoons. I mean, the crazy thing about South Park is it's still relevant today. Like, a South Park episode now is far funnier than a Family Guy or Simpsons episode. It is crazy how they keep that show so relevant. Cartman is up there with Hawkeye Pierce as one of the greatest TV characters. It is one of the best shows ever.
So I would say this about Simpsons versus South Park. The Simpsons is the greater TV show in the sense that it both follows the rules and transcends them. You know, it's a family show, the dynamics, Seinfeld once said, no hugging, no learning. But in The Simpsons, there's hugging and learning, and that's very TV.
Yeah.
South Park just is funnier. Like, as great and funny as The Simpsons is, South Park is funnier. It's probably the funniest show that's ever been on TV.
It's remarkable how just you can go almost to any season. And you know, they tackle what I always love is they tackle all issues, and they will go after left wing, right wing, every religion. They're not afraid of taboos. And I don't think they have. I hope they never apologize. Even if there's comedy that we look at now and go, okay, that went over the line. And I fully understand why this group is offended. There's part of me that hopes they never apologize.
Being offended in today's culture is a really complicated place because you want to respect people's rights to not be picked on. And you also don't want to live in a society where we can't laugh about things. So, like, it's fucked up, to be perfectly frank. I wish I had some great TED talk on how comedy can exist in the 21st century. I don't know. Yeah. My wife is the head of production for comedy at the CBC. We talk about comedy all day long. And, you know, there's still lots of people doing amazing stuff. But for pure funny, like 30 Rock was up there for pure funny. I guess, like, there's a difference between being a great show and then just a great forum for jokes.
Yes.
30 Rock had the best jokes. South Park has the best jokes. What's another show that had great jokes? Arrested Development had great jokes.
Veep,
that's another one. That's a great one.
Yep.
And if you love comedy, it's almost like, in the WWF, they always used to say that Vince, when it came right down to it, was always just looking for a giant. Like, in his mind, no matter how great you were, it was always better if you were just a little bigger. And, you know, if you're a comedy fan, you just feel that way about pure jokes. You know, there's something to be, like, John Mulaney has pure jokes.
Yes.
You know, it may not be the cleverest, but it's the funniest.
So did she start on season one? Is she working her way, or is it?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So right from the start, that's the way to do it.
Right from jump. She loves Kenny, and that's because she's 12.
Yeah.
She's mad at Cartman because Cartman's always so mean to Kenny, but, you know, she hasn't stopped watching.
I think it's a good thing that she hasn't immediately grafted onto Cartman. I'm glad. Like, I love Cartman, but I think when you're 12, hopefully there's part of you that your initial reaction isn't to recognize all the satire, but just don't like him because he's very unlikable.
She walked down the stairs the other morning and she looked at me and she said, "Hey, Dad."
See you guys. I'm going home.
When we used to work at Off the Record, I remember you would do all your work and you were so detailed and fastidious about like every single last thing that you needed to do was done. And when it was done, I guess because we worked at next to Comedy Network, you had access to all the South Parks.
Yeah.
You would just sit there and watch them until it was time to go home.
Yeah. AllSP.com was also another great website back in the day before YouTube was really a thing.
So that's where we're at, Matt. That's where March break is right now.
Nice.
My daughter watched The Batman last night. She gave it 3.9 out of 5. Damn. Oh, wait. Sorry, it was 3.9 out of 10.
Oh, no. Oh, that's a very different score. So she didn't like it at all.
My wife just yelled from, you know, the rafters, out of 10.
Thank you, Sandra. Did you see it?
No, I haven't seen it yet. She went with her aunt.
Okay.
It looks, I'll put it this way. I'm either going to watch it and think this is the best one or the worst one.
It feels that way. Do you ever worry they're just getting too dark? You know, like in wrestling at some point when the Hardy brothers are jumping off of 7 ladders onto the ground and you're like, you know what? At some point you must stop pushing the boundaries because you're a human, you'll die. I wonder if we keep making it too dark, like it just at some point, I'll put it like this. I hope there is some comedy to it. There is some lightness as well.
One of the ways that franchises jump the shark is they become the adjective that you associate them with. And what I mean by that is, so like there's been a, like through Christopher Nolan and there's just been like a darkness to the Batman character. And clearly it's of the moment, people really like it, but now they're not making a dark movie. It's almost like they're making a movie to justify being emo. Like it just goes too far.
Yeah.
And it's either a perfect expression of the anti-hero, you know, like a Kurt Cobain, or it's just going to feel like the way marketers put together feelings.
Mm-hmm. And yeah.
You know, we'll see. We'll see. I feel like if Catwoman comes out of this with someone who's finally done a good Catwoman, that would be great. Actually, I shouldn't say finally done a good Catwoman, because Michelle Pfeiffer's was really good. And some of like Eartha Kitt and Julie Newmar, like those Catwomen were
Halle
great.
Halle Berry was shit. Basically, what the Halle Berry one did.
That's
not
what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But also, like, we've fallen in love with the Joker. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for good reason. Joker is an incredible character. It's like a top 5 villain in all comics. But I feel like of all the Batman pantheon, Catwoman hasn't gotten her due because she's also a great character.
Yep.
So hopefully that will be good. Have you seen it? I'm trying to figure, have you seen it?
No, I haven't. I haven't seen it yet. I've been trying to. It'll happen. I'll go soon to the theater to see it. Hey, to the young people out there, if you didn't see it, see Jack Nicholson's The Joker. It's his version, the first Batman. And I know some people look at it as cartoonish, but it's really clever. It's entertaining. And there is some evil, but there's also fun.
I think he was one of the first big stars to get revenue participation.
Yes, and he was.
You know, and he's still basically getting rich from that today.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Marlon Brando, when he was Kal-El, got $3 million and everyone went crazy for that. But in the end, kids, take the points. Gamble on yourself and take the points.
Every time. So where do you want to start in sports, Bob?
I want to start with the Leafs. Because trade deadline is coming up and now the rubber is really going to hit the road. And, you know, everybody has been talking about goaltending, but now the decision really has to be made. Do you actually go out and get one? Like, does it become a failure of a trade deadline if you don't acquire another goalie? Matt, I got my thoughts, but you kick it off.
I don't think it's a failure because I don't think maybe Anton Forsberg who's been good for Ottawa, but is Marc-Andre Fleury that much better than what we have now? Now, is he better than Peter Mrazek? Hells yes. But Jack Campbell will come back soon, and we'll see what version he looks like and if he's fully healthy. Because I think he's a guy who probably did play hurt. Because, he's like, no, I got to do this for the team. I got to do this for the team. I don't see one goaltender that's really going to put you over the top, or one goaltender that is so much better than what the team currently has. So I don't think it's a failure if they don't get a goalie.
Okay, so the fact that it's a rib injury, and that rib injuries tend to linger. Uh-huh. They're notoriously hard to rehab. They're finicky. Does that change your opinion? Because it's not like he's coming back from, you know, an ankle or I don't know. It just feels like if his movement is restricted, and it's the kind of thing where there really isn't a clear start date for him, he might wind up starting too early just to get him back in there. And then you've got a busted up goalie that you're trying to win a cup with.
We got the Vezina and the Calder finalists and Eric Schulman, you know, or Schulgren, excuse me, not Dan Schulman. And Schulgren, what are you worried about?
Oh, Shelley.
Yeah, Shelley.
Yeah, I love Toronto. The next day, the goaltending problems have all been solved because some guy you've never heard of came in and played okay.
It was just nice not to have Mrazek. I think that's what it was. I'll give Leaf fans more credit, but they're just like, oh, thank Christ, long shots are actually being saved. I'd love to see it done, but I don't know if they've got the bullets to go after get a Marc-Andre Fleury, who, again, he's not exactly impressed me this year.
Well, he's, you know, 1 year removed from a pretty great season. But even beyond that, all indications, I don't have any special knowledge. This is just what everyone says, is he doesn't really have an interest to come here. Uh-huh. So, you know, he doesn't have to, according to his deal. So I don't know, Matt.
I do want
to see a goalie, you know, whether it's a Varlamov. I would even take a James Reimer at this point, you know, because here's the thing. This team has a fragile psyche at the best of times.
Yes.
And going into the playoffs, like, you're not playing the Montreal Canadiens this time around, and they sagged against them, but you're playing a Florida or a Tampa or, you know, whoever, but Florida or Tampa, who are really excellent teams. And the margin of victory could be extremely slim between those teams. And if it comes down to a Peter Mrazek or a James Reimer or a Varlamov, it could be one goal decides it. And if they lose that first round, I think it's catastrophic for this core four. And I think it's catastrophic for this organization. So I kind of feel like, yeah, I didn't think this 2 or 3 weeks ago. I thought the most important thing they needed was defense and maybe someone for the fourth line. No, just it's been so bad that you can't go into the, like, what if you have to go into the playoffs with Peter Mrazek? Like, you just have to.
He'll be my pushback, even though everything you say makes complete sense. The one thing we know about the Maple Leafs is they never rush guys back. Look how cautious they were with Austin Matthews before the start of the year. Like, this is a team that will wait. So I'm going to go in with faith that it will be Jack Campbell that will get a guy that was, if we get a version that's not as good as what he was for the first 2 months, but is better than what he was in the last 2 months, and that's somewhere in between, that is good enough goaltending to win you a couple rounds, and you go with that, and then hopefully this Shelley is a decent enough backup. So that's sort of where I see it, and I'd rather, if the Leafs, whatever ammunition they have at the trade deadline, I'd spend it on defense.
So here's my pushback.
Yeah.
A lot of ifs in your situation.
Yes.
Where if Campbell comes back, if he's as good as he was, if we don't have to see Peter Mrazek, because it's not that any one of these things couldn't happen, but if even one of them doesn't happen, mm-hmm. they're cooked.
Yeah.
They're cooked. Like, what you have to ask yourself is, can I live with Peter Mrazek being my goaltender in the playoffs? You just have to ask yourself that. Like, it's the only question.
No, when it comes to, by the way, Bob, that doesn't need an if. The answer is, I cannot live with Peter Mrazek as my goalie in the playoffs.
Right. So then you have to get another goalie.
Or it's the Campbell and Shelley combo.
But then you might have to live with Shelley being your goalie. Like, are you prepared to take an untested and or shitty goalie as the guy that you're pinning your hopes on in these playoffs? Because if you don't get another goalie, that's a scenario you just might face. And there's the, yes, I'm willing to live with it, but I hope it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. It's not my best case scenario. Or it's the, no fucking way, this can never happen because that's a disaster. I'm kind of in camp number two.
I'm in camp number one, and here's another reason why. And by the way, as we argue this, I don't feel 100% good about my side of this argument. let's put all the cards on the table here.
You know what causes, like, when I'm forced to defend Trudeau, and I'm like, you know, he wasn't really like my number one pick, guys. It's just, I think the other thing is worse.
Yeah, exactly. goalies are weird. Goalies are strange. The Hamburglar is a star. The Hamburglar is out. Jordan Binnington is the reason the Blues won. Jordan Binnington's been up and down since then. Matt Murray's got a couple Stanley Cup wins to his name. Marc-Andre Fleury is great and bad. Goalies are strange and weird. I can't count on any of them. So I'd rather the Leafs, who only have limited amount of ammunition, to spend it on defense, which I feel is a little bit more quantifiable than going after another goalie. There.
All right. So, all right. And I've obviously made my point pretty clear.
Yeah.
Here's a practical question for the right now. They're playing Carolina. Matt, you're the coach. Who's your goalie tonight?
Shogun. That's who they're going with. They already said. Sheldon Keefe said this is an easy decision.
Not who should they? I mean, I'm not who are they? Who should they? Do you agree with that decision?
No, I agree with that decision. Peter Mrazek, it's not that he's giving up four goals or more in like his last five or six starts, but he's done that against bad teams, Buffalo twice, Arizona, Columbus. It's not like he's giving up a lot of goals in 6-5 shootouts to Tampa, Florida, or teams like that. He's doing bad against the bad teams. He doesn't deserve a start tonight.
Yeah, I wish I didn't have to agree with you on this, but I do agree. I do agree because he's your better of the two options right now, or at least as ever, you know, as suggested by the last game, in the last couple of games. But I went and looked at the standings, and do you know where the Bruins sit right now?
I think two points behind.
2 points behind.
Yeah.
Do you care where the Leafs finish? Do you care if they're third or fourth?
Probably not. I care if there was a chance for them to get first or second, but if not, it's like, screw it. You got to go in the blender eventually.
I almost feel like it's an advantage for this team to have to be on the road, because if they have a bad first period at home, I think they're going to be just shell-shocked by the response of the crowd. It might actually be a weird case where home with all the baggage might be worse than being on the road, especially to start. But I'm kind of with you, only because the teams they're going to have to face are all good. It's not like you have one incredible juggernaut and then a big drop off to the other teams you could face. They're all good. And so, no, I'm not that worried about where they finish either, to tell you the truth. I just wonder, like, are you trying to rehabilitate Mrazek now? And does giving him the net help or hurt in that effort?
Yeah, I have no idea. It's so weird with goalies where Mrazek is saying all the right things and he sounds like he's in a, you know, that he's at peace with what's going on right now. He's going to try to get better. But then when you see him in net, when he looks nervous, it's like, why are you looking nervous? You've got a team that outwardly will always support you and will give you four goals a night. So I have no idea what's going on inside his head. I just know what's going on between his legs. And that's the puck going past.
All righty then.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I don't honestly, like, we could sit here and talk about like what's the right idea, but it's unsatisfying in a way because none of them feel good.
Yep.
You know, it's the old, where do you want the punch? Do you want it in the face, the gut, or the balls?
Yeah. It's like where I'm a small child, my head with buried in the covers in my bed. And I don't know, are the monsters coming from under the bed or in the closet? I'm not sure, but I'm not feeling good.
All right. One last question on goaltending. And then I want to get to this thing about defense you brought up.
Yeah.
Are you of the school that believes that when your best players are playing really well, Matthews has been incredible, Marner has put in a really great season, yeah, do you owe those guys a move? Are you someone that believes that if you don't make a move, because they're clearly not happy about the goaltending situation, the room has clearly not got confidence, do you owe it to them to make a deal to show that you hear them, or do you just worry about long-term prospects?
No, you owe it to them. You owe it to them to try, whether, again, that's a goalie or defense or whatever, or, you know, some sneaky forward that can help that second line. You do owe it to them because injuries happen. And when both those guys are having incredible seasons, yeah, I do believe in that school of thought.
I think so too. I think it's another reason why I got to go get a goalie, is because you have to at least show you tried to not make them win 6-4 games. Mm-hmm. All right. So you believe in defense. Is there a particular line of, like, is there a particular target you've got in mind, or In Matt's perfect world, what happens?
I mean, if you could get Chikrin, I mean, that's the perfect world. If you could go, if you could go and get him. The problem is that other teams have television sets and everyone knows what's going on. But that would be the ideal situation. But it's wildly unrealistic.
So let's say it's a Justin Braun, who's a 35-year-old guy who's been around a while, and he's probably going to help bolster your bottom pair. Are you satisfied if that's what it is? If it's sort of tinkering near the bottom and not necessarily a top four guy?
Yeah, because there's going to be so many teams bidding on defense. And if that means you don't have to rely on both Sandin and Liljegren, then great. And both of them have had, for their age and how many games they've played, both of them have played well. And both of them, you've seen flashes that this could be a good future. But that young, with that little experience in the playoffs, makes me nervous. One of them, fine. Two of them, nervous. So if you can bring someone to bolster that final line, and then the other big if, of course, is if Jake Muzzin comes back, then yeah, then I'm feeling okay with that.
I'm kind of feeling like the price for defense at the trade deadline is always so incredibly high that if you're not really getting somebody that you really, really want, don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't do it. But all of this comes back to the idea of your window. I started to ask myself, realistically, what's the Leafs window here? And I think it's as long as Austin Matthews is here. And that means you've got him for this year and then two more, and then he's UFA. So would I overcommit to get somebody who's pretty good? Probably not. Like, you know, Klingberg, everybody brings up his name, and, you know, he's obviously got skill, might not be a perfect fit, but how much are you willing to pay to actually get that guy? See, it's not Taylor Hall last year. Taylor Hall went to Boston for a second rounder. Like, that's great. I just don't think that's what the price is going to be to get a top four defenseman.
Well, look at Ben Sherratt. Florida had to give up a ton to get him, and then that resets the market.
You know, do you remember years ago we were talking about, oh, shit, he went Shattenkirk. Should they go and get Shattenkirk? Like, there's always this idea that there's this defenseman who's going to come and put you over the top. And trade deadlines are so funny because they almost never happen that way, you know? I kind of feel like the most impactful guy we'll wind up getting will probably be a forward. Just because the market is bigger and probably easier to work with for Dubas.
Yes.
More options, lower prices. I kind of think, like, at the end of the day, there'll be like another forward that you can throw into the mix.
A forward represents a detached home in Guelph. A defenseman who can make any difference, well, you're in the beaches.
Yeah, that's actually a great real estate analogy. I don't think I've ever heard you make a real estate analogy before.
It's my first one ever.
It worked, though. I really liked it.
Thank you.
I think Callie Yarncroc is going to be a Leaf.
I don't want him to be a Leaf. I'm not going to be able to pronounce that last name correctly.
I believe his last name means Iron Hook.
If I called him Iron Hook, I could do that. By the way, off topic, we had a guest. Yeah. I was filling in the morning show today. We had a guest. His last name is Capaccio. And when I was promoting, he was coming up. I called him Cappuccino.
Did you really?
Yeah.
How did Carlo take that?
Exactly how you would expect. And the worst part is you're doing the show and you're looking at everyone in Zoom, and there's nothing that robs your confidence more when you see the corner of your eye, when your technical producer or your board op, they give a look where it's half laughing and half grimacing like someone ripped one. And just that look on their face where you know you screwed up.
I have to say, though, you do it with charm.
Yeah.
You know, for other people, it's a fart in an elevator. But for you, it's, you know, you have a charm about it.
Ugh. So anyway. Yeah. Well, we'll find out Monday. It'll be the same thing. I root for nothing to happen. And this is only because we've worked in the business so long. I love seeing people on live TV having to talk when nothing's going on. I get such a kick out of it.
The TSN crew have gotten really good at it.
They have.
You know, Duthie is obviously amazing. They have such a deep roster of talent. For some reason, there's always an O-Dog blooper at the end of the day, and they're never planned. Like, they're never planned. And there always is one. I don't know how that happens. happens.
My favorite, and we were making fun of James Duffy. I'm like, James, be honest. When you say blank is a good puck moving defenseman, that's just code for you haven't watched this guy play more than three times this year. And he sort of said yes.
He sort of said yes.
Yeah.
I like that. Okay. Well, then we can transition to another topic, but let me throw out a Twitter question that I put on a Twitter poll that I put on about an hour ago. That'll take us there. So I wrote, who is closer to winning a title? Leafs, Jays. How do you think people voted?
Blue Jays.
How do you think people voted?
Oh, I think
what percentage of people pick the Jays, do you think?
I'm going to go 89%.
Amazing. 86%.
Oh, nice.
86% of people pick the Jays. 14% of people pick the Leafs. And those numbers just, the percentages of them actually making it to the World Series just went up with Matt Chapman.
It did. And, you know, they still might have another move in them. They got Kikuchi as to be their fifth starter.
Is that Cappuccino?
Kikuchi. By the way, I didn't even need to mention him. I could have just gone Gausman and then talked about Nate Pearson. You know, I could have gone the easy way. It's my fault for trying. I'm like Icarus with a lisp and a stutter. They've done so much well considering they lost Robbie Ray and Marcus Semien. And if, you know, with Jose Berrio, put it this way, if Hyunjin Ryu is your fourth starter, you're doing pretty damn well in terms of starting rotation.
I've been thinking about Hyunjin Ryu and the improved defense behind him. And hopefully that translates into a couple more wins out of him per year. And just in general, like, this is the exciting part of when you're tinkering with a World Series caliber team is when you actually start looking at defense. Like, you've got enough bats, you've got enough arms. Now you start saying, okay, can we win enough close games? Can we not hand games over? And the fact is, you know, there's an extra wild card spot now.
Yeah.
The Jays, had this been last year, would have been a playoff team. And this has to have affected the algebra of when you go for it. Like, the young guys are obviously ready. You could see it at the end of last year. But the fact that there's an extra playoff spot now, yeah. I love their options. I obviously pick the Jays over the Leafs. And what's really interesting about it is it gets to windows. Like, it took us a while to get to another window. We had one in 2015. It's now 2022, and we've got, I think, probably two or three really solid kicks at this starting now.
And also, you're still not paying Bo and Vlad yet. And I don't have the exact financial windows of when they're going to start getting massive deals. But then it allows you to go out and sign guys. And I think the thing that should make Blue Jay fans happy is Rogers is spending money. Started with Hyunjin Ryu. Then it was George Springer. Then it was Gausman. And now trading for Chapman. You know, like, this team is not afraid or as reticent to spend money as they were during the J.P. Ricciardi years.
I wonder to what extent COVID factored into this, the fact that it looks like they're going to be able to play all their home dates this summer.
Yeah.
It has to, right? Like, we don't talk enough about how the people who control the money see the game. Like, I've heard people say in hockey, like, you know, does Calgary have to go for it? Does Winnipeg have to go for it at trade deadline? Because, you know, particularly Winnipeg or Vancouver, I should say, because they lost a lot of home dates over the last couple of years, you know, like there's been a lot of money lost to COVID, and the fact that you're like the Jays and you can make some of that back up, perhaps with playoff revenue. Yeah. You got to go for it. Right.
Oh yeah. And when you make the playoffs, that's where the money comes, because you're no longer paying the players. The player's salary represents the regular season. Every home playoff game, that is free found money. And that's why you go for it. And we know this about Toronto. If they're a winning team, an entertaining team, people are going to go. And I think people are so craved for entertainment and craved to not be in their stupid homes anymore that, they've got an excellent chance of having near sellouts for almost all their 81 games.
Let me ask you, you've been to enough April games at the Dome to know it sucks.
Yep.
Would you go, if you had good seats, to every single home game in April, if you didn't have to pay good seats?
Oh yeah.
Really?
Oh, if I switch, if I didn't have to pay 100%, there's so much fun things. Also, Bob, the shift has been banned. Maybe there'll be a little more athleticism out there.
I because we used to have press passes, mm-hmm. you know, I went to a lot of games, and every April I'd always plan to go to all of them.
Yeah.
But it starts to drag on, man.
By the way,
pretty quick.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. No, it does. You're right. It does drag. My favorite was always the Jays, and this happened a lot in the 2000s. Game one at home, sellout. Game two, 16,000 fans.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, just as a bit of inside baseball, the baseball press box, I think, is the best one of all the Toronto sports. The Raptors one kind of sucks because most of the people are actually on the court. Like, a lot of people cover courtside, so it's not quite the same party atmosphere.
Yeah.
Hockey, everybody's too serious. Mm-hmm. I remember Matthew Schenetti getting upset with me because I was sitting in his seat. Like, it's not like it said Matthew Schenetti on it, but I think it was sort of like, you're a radio guy, I'm a TV guy.
Yeah.
And like, I always sit here. It becomes like this weird jockeying for position. Like the Leafs, it's really like a country club up there. But the Jays, I always found it was like fun. People talking, people are eating popcorn. I used to sit next to Scotty MacArthur, and he would tell me all kinds of really cool stuff about what was going on around the league. And yeah, I don't know. Like, what's your favorite press box?
Well, it's definitely baseball because there's 81 home games. Everyone's is a little more chill. They realize, okay, hey, no matter what happens, no matter what I write, no matter what happens today, I'll see you tomorrow. And then I'll see you the day after that. 100%. And I feel there's just more popcorn around for the baseball one. And when popcorn's around, you can only take things so seriously when that popcorn smell is in the air.
You know, it's funny, like the Leafs, I don't know what it is, but there's always this low-grade tension around people covering the team. I don't know why, but it just seems a little uptight. The Raptors is pretty loosey-goosey, and then the Jays, for some reason, like to your point, it kind of feels like summer camp.
Yeah.
I think you're right. It is because you're going to see everybody the next day, though.
Yeah. I'll see you tomorrow. You know, you can't be as much of a dick. And also the hockey one, there's always just so much more media. And then it's everyone competing. And then there's the battle of analytics versus mainstream. And then you get that as well. And, you know, honestly, baseball, you don't have as much of that.
The press box with the Leafs, it's like half the people there, like they take it so seriously. It's like they're studying for the LSATs or something, you know? I don't know. I it's hard for me to say baseball is the most fun anything.
Let him have this, Bob.
What's that?
Let him have it. Let him have this. Baseball rarely gets to be the number one for fun. It's basically baseball books, baseball movies are better than any of the other sports. And then after that, the other sports usually win.
Oh, okay. So let's do our classic, like, tell me who they are in wine. Mm. So Matt Chapman, new third baseman. He is defensively amazing and has had some big offensive seasons, although they've dropped off in recent memory. So who would be, like, what would Matt be if he was a wine?
Okay, so, yeah, okay, so again, let's break this down. He's been a bit up and down, but he's always there to save you. But let's go with that theme.
Wait, here's the theme.
Yeah.
He's got great range. So maybe it's a grape that, like, covers a wide range.
Oh, okay. Okay, let's go with, okay, so what's my favorite in terms of just rate? Oh, easy, Bob. I know I use this answer all the time, but I'll be very specific. Let's go with Riesling, because in Germany, like in Moselle, it's more sweet. It's a little bit more gentle. But then you get to Austria, and it's meaner, and it's sharper and tangier. And then even like somewhere like Australia, like Eden Valley, these crazy petrol-smelling Rieslings. There's so much versatility.
I love it. I love it. We should, on our Instagram page, post these.
Yeah. Ooh, by the way, Bob, speaking of my Instagram page, you're going to be excited about a post that's coming up soon. The other night, a friend of mine who owns a catering company, he's this older gentleman named Jeffrey, and he's got lots of old wine, and he just wants to drink it with people that he likes. So he brought two bottles of high-end wine and we had to blind taste it. But here's the good part. He always makes us eat crazy food paired with these wines. So on Tuesday night, I ate braised chicken feet, lamb testicles with worm dust on top of it.
How was it?
The worm dust, I'll start there. It was actually this very like spicy salt flavoring. It's really cool. The braised chicken feet was tasty, very bony, so you had to work for it. And the lamb testicle, you felt very queasy going in. If you didn't know, you would have just assumed it was a well-made sausage.
All right, then. So give it out of 10. Was it better than my daughter rating the Batman?
Yes, much better than the Batman.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, this is why you never had kids, Matt, is so that you can do stuff like this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And then I can go home, have a nap, go get my hair cut the next day. And you know what, Bob? What are you doing today? Wherever the day takes me.
So my daughter is with her aunt right now for a couple of days. And I woke up this morning and I'm talking to my parents. And I said, honestly, like, if you're a grown up with a job and you don't have kids, everything is easy. Like, there's no excuse for not doing everything well. Because there are no obstacles.
It's true. Well, I'll say this. The degree of difficulty is far lesser for me than it is for you. And there's
or,
no...
Or
there's
those no like thing. Me.
What's that?
Yeah. Or those like me.
Yeah.
As I laughed at my mom, I said, honestly, on any given day, the absolute most important thing that I need to do is never higher than fourth or fifth on my list of things to do.
Yeah. It's basically keep my child alive.
By the way, I forgot to ask you, since we're talking about drinking wine and the Batman came back up. So at 3 hours long, you like to drink in the movie theater. Does that mean you'll be sloshed after you see the Batman?
No, because it just means you run out of wine sooner. Because we'll bring the equivalent of basically a bottle of wine. Yeah, a bottle of wine between Amy and I. So if it's a 3-hour movie, we're still having popcorn. Are you kidding? By the end of that movie with that popcorn with just half a bottle, I could still do my other day job as a school bus driver.
Well, that's good to know.
Dark joke there.
It's pretty funny though.
Yeah.
Anything else that you want to go over today? I do have some football questions for you.
Yeah, let's hit the NFL. And by the way, we're going to tell people as we're recording this, don't know where Deshaun Watson ends up. And the Deshaun Watson conversation is always such a hard one because you don't want to immediately just get into what does this mean for the Saints' third down offense? Like the morality, the legal side to this. And there's other examples like Tyreek Hill, Kareem Hunt have done horrible things. And we've basically forgotten about it. But when you have like 21 to 23 different civil cases against someone, like there is a real pattern of sexual misconduct with Deshaun Watson.
That's a less fun take than the one I wanted to start with about Von Miller.
Von Miller, how much of that is about just getting as much money as you can when you just won a Super Bowl, you're second, you're in your early 30s, football is dangerous. How much of it's just about the money and how much of it is Josh Allen can be a Pied Piper for free agents?
I don't know. I was about to ask you the same question. I think that Buffalo is probably never going to say no to another body that it can throw at Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of money. I've loved Von Miller for a long time as a player. I always worry about when a guy's Super Bowl and he's rich.
Yeah.
You know, there's only so many hits. Like, there are obsessives out there who want to keep going, but I got to believe at some point it's less fun to get hurt, even in the cause of winning. So I don't know. Do you like that move?
I do like the move because their window their window is now. You know, you've got Josh Allen at his peak. You got Stephon Diggs. You need another pass rusher. You saw what happened in the Chiefs-Bills game in the playoffs. Von Miller was great as well in the Rams postseason run. He wasn't like, you know, just along for the ride. Like, he was a difference maker. I don't know what it's going to mean a couple of years down the road, but NFL salary caps are so weird and, you know, how much of it's guaranteed and all that. But yes, philosophically, you needed a pass rusher. You got a very good pass rusher. I thought I would have taken him over Chandler Jones 10 times out of 10. I like that move.
How do you like what the Giants are doing?
Well, they were apparently all in for Mitch Trubisky, and he went to the Giants. Oh, I'm happy because there's no more David fucking Gettleman, okay? Like, that's it. He's gone. Now they got to trade Saquon Barkley, and they've got to draft a quarterback.
Tom Brady coming back.
Good. I'm so happy. NFL's better with as many good quarterbacks out there. And imagine if Tom Brady didn't come back. It's Aaron Rodgers. Then there's a drop-off. The next level is Dak Prescott and Kyler Murray and Matt Stafford. But there is not enough good quarterbacks in the NFC. Thrilled that Brady is back.
To what extent do you think he would have come back if he was still in the AFC?
I think he would have found his way over to the NFC. I think he's smart enough to realize I got to get out of here with all these quarterbacks.
Hmm. I'm always amazed by how people, like, I don't think they give these guys enough credit for being smart. Like, Tom Brady is like probably super duper smart and knows exactly how everything affects Tom Brady. So I bet you he looked around and said, you know, I've got a chance to be the second, you know, the ego says, I'm sure he's thinking, I've got a chance to be the best quarterback in the NFC, but no worse than second.
No worse.
And he finds himself back in a title game again, for sure. And I'm with you on this one. It's really funny, the rehabilitation of Tom Brady, because for years, particularly in the AFC East, he was my number one enemy.
Yep.
But just watching, he's entering George Foreman territory in the sense that once you're past a certain age, it's impossible to root for someone who's over, like, past a certain point. Like, Chris Chelios was one of the most hated people in the NHL. But eventually, you've got to start rooting for him because he's doing something amazing.
Yeah, it's true. Unless it's that really cool Cinderella story, it's hard to root against Brady, even when I get it. All the money, all the fame, all the titles. But you're going to be rooting for him over Matt Ryan, you know, I would root for Dak over Tom Brady, but I'm not rooting for the Cowboys over Tampa Bay.
Exactly. Like, I'm watching the other day when Ovechkin breaks number one European goal scorer of all time, and Jagr sends him a note and he's like, you know, I'm still playing, I might come over. Like, what could be better than Jagr playing more NHL games?
Oh, I'd love it. Just throw him out there, get him 10 minutes, power play two. Who wouldn't want Jagr back on the ice?
There's just, like, young kids are not interesting anymore because there's so many of them achieving at a high level. Like, there used to be something really charming about the epically talented rookie.
Yeah.
That just comes in and out of nowhere. But, like, every year there's epically talent. Like, honestly, like, you look in basketball, like, the last draft class, there's four or five guys who are already among the best players on their team right now.
Yeah.
So there's nothing really especially charming about the precocious kid. I think we've sort of gone the other way, which is the impossibly still kicking veteran is now so much more interesting.
Bob, I will give you the best example that is so good you will acquiesce and you will not be able to find a better one. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
The Boston Celtics signed Joe Johnson to a 10 or a 15-day contract. He got in late. He went full ISO Joe. He screen, ISO, hit a jumper. I remember that offensive possession.
Oh, my God. And that's a great example because as a Raptors fan, you remember him back to the Nets?
Yeah.
He hated Joe Johnson. He always torched us.
Yeah.
And now you're rooting for him. That's That's actually a great one. Like, who are the most lovable over 40s right now?
Well, let's see. Andrew Whitworth, the lineman for the Rams, retired, so he's now out of it. Ovechkin's getting close to 40, but, you know, Putin. So makes that one a little bit more difficult.
How old's Bergeron? Patrice Bergeron's playing amazing. And he's got to be up there. How old is Patrice Bergeron?
I think he's 36. But the problem is when you doing things helps Brad Marchand, then it's impossible to root for Bergeron.
So he's guilty by association.
Yeah. But Zdeno Chara, I think Zdeno Chara, when he broke the record for the most games played by defensemen, he got into a fight.
That's pretty good. Bergeron, you were right. Bergeron's 36.
Yeah, yeah. So
the Jays had, what was his name, LaTroy Hawkins?
Yeah, LaTroy Hawkins.
Right at the end of his career.
40-year-old.
And what's the name? How old is Bartolo Colon?
I don't know, 58?
You know who's my favorite old-timer player of all time, I think?
Can I guess?
Yeah, yeah.
Jamie Moyer.
No, that's a good one, though. I was going to say Jesse Orosco.
Yes, that's another good one.
Because he had the one thing that would be the best thing you can have in all of pro sports. Be left-handed and throw pitches.
Yep.
they just kept trotting about it. Like, he played to his 40s, and it was the same thing every time. Come in and get one batter.
Okay, Bob, yeah. I'm going to give you who's better life. Lefty specialist, or, and I'm going to be very specific because he just signed a 1-year deal for like $2.5 million, perennial backup quarterback Chase McDaniels, who was like a fifth round pick. But Chase McDaniels, Bob, like if we talk about quarterbacks that are overpaid, Kirk Cousins gets paid like $46,000 for every pass attempt. Chase McDaniel has made about $168,000 for every pass attempt. Every year he gets signed for a couple million. Every year he almost never plays. So perennial backup or lefty specialist?
I'm going to go with lefty specialist because you actually get to play a little bit and you actually impact the game.
Yep.
True. But you've raised such an important point here, which is who is the greatest backup QB of all time. And I don't mean the QB who came in and did something amazing. I mean, like the Jeff Hostetler, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy who was always the backup, who was the best at the clipboard in history.
I'm going to go like with a Brad or Brendan, whoever the Hoyer is, who's like backed up Brady a bunch of times. He's going to be near the top of the list. Chase McDaniel sometimes was the third stringer, but just that perennial backup guy. I'm going to go with Hoyer because that's always the name that comes to mind.
There was, John Kitna.
Yep. Excellent backup quarterback. Great backup quarterback.
You know, and anytime he actually got some reps, you're like, you know, he can win you a game.
And then the next week, he can't win you shit.
But for that one quarter.
You know who that's going to be? That's going to be Gardner Minshew.
Ooh.
Gardner Minshew has got a 20-year career ahead of him if he wants it, just signing that one-year, $2.8 million contract.
The genius of the backup quarterback is you've got your uniform on, but you got the clipboards. So it looks like you're doing something.
Yes.
Like the 12th man on a basketball team is just sitting there high-fiving people, and you start to look like you're just along for the ride. You can have a lot of fun, but you're along for the ride. But when you have a clipboard, Matt, well, now you're doing something.
It's so true. And sometimes you got the headset, like you're working at the back of the Gap, and you're asking about snacks. You know?
Man, I might be wrong. Maybe backup quarterback is the better life.
It's pretty good. You play in the preseason, and then sometimes, you know, you get a little mop-up duty. That's basically their only job. But I love the career of Chase McDaniel. I remember him at college, and he was, you know, like a mid to late round pick. But every year, there he is. He's always there with a clipboard.
You know, we should do a whole show dedicated and call it the and sometimes why show. Like the players that are always around the action, but never in the action. I feel like we talked about this before, but Jamie McLennan and all of his years as a backup.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the understudies. God, there's a, Sports Illustrated must have done this back in the day. That feels like classic Sports Illustrated from the 80s and 90s to do an examination of the understudy.
Clemenson from the backup goalie for Marty Brodeur when Marty would play 70 games a year.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Well, there you have it.
There you have it.
We've covered so much today, from Jesse Orozco to eating worm dust. Like, how could anyone ever say we don't take them on a journey?
We do, exactly. Hey, as we end this, how's Lent treating you? And yeah, well, I was going to say, how's March break? But Cece's with an aunt. That's critical. But how's Lent?
It's been okay, actually. Like I'm sort of settling into it now. I'm like on day 15. Mm. So I'm seeing some benefits, dropped a couple of pounds. I got some good energy going. I'll start getting pretty angry around day 25 when like you realize this hasn't ended yet.
Is that when Sandra finds the old typewriter with no food and all Lent makes Bob a mad guy?
Wendy, love of my life.
No. Wendy, is it love of my life or light of my life?
No, it's light of my life. You got it. Yeah. Wendy, light of my life. Wow, we've done some Jack Nicholson today. Okay.
We have.
What is Jack Nicholson's greatest underrated role?
Oh, God. Okay, so it can't be an Oscar winner because I loved him as good as it gets. Because his character is kind of despicable. Anyone else with those lines, we would hate them. But Jack, he gets the benefit. But we can't go with that. I got one.
You go first, because it sounds like you got one too.
Broadcast news.
That's the one I was going to pick.
Yeah!
Bill, the network guy in Broadcast News. And when he's looking around the room and all the cuts are happening, he says, God, you know, it's just so sad. You hate to see it. And the news director says, well, you can give back some of your salary. And he looks at him like, would you fuck yourself?
Bob, we're not gonna do better than that. That we both nailed Broadcast News. We're doing this for the young kids. All the best. Bye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.